It's time for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. It is Monday, November 29th. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving holiday. I apologize in advance if you hear me coughing away a little bit in here. Caught a nasty little cold that just sucked all the energy out of me and my appetite. So I actually lost weight over this Thanksgiving holiday. I think that's the first, but I'm going to be still overcoming it. Fortunately, I shared the cold with my wife, the cook, after Thanksgiving. So still had some great food. And now she's dealing with what I've got. So hope you're all feeling well and healthy and everywhere, that this latest strain of COVID is not coming your way. We're going to see what it's done to the market. Talk a little bit later to Matt and get his perspective on it. I'm sure Les will have something to say as well about it. But we're excited to have you here. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. Correct me if I'm wrong. Let me know. I think we're the only live podcast in the industry in the nation. There's a lot of great podcasts out there, and I encourage you to check out all the podcasts over at industrysyndicate.com. But we're the only live one. We're the first and the only still producing that. Of course, you listen to it on a download basis. But again, our commitment is to bring you a timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime, anywhere. We're always grateful for our live listeners and the feedback I'm getting. You can text me at 512-632-2900 if you want to send me feedback as you're listening or put in questions. That's always great. Also, I have LinkedIn messages up. You can send messages via LinkedIn. Send it to David Lickin. Anyway, looking forward to it and getting into this podcast. We've got a special hot topic segment. Brent Emler, my dear buddy, Brent Emler, who is with Velma for years, now is director of sales at Lender Toolkit. And he is here with a special guest, Barry Rogers, who is SVP of Strategic Planning at Lennar Mortgage. Very excited to have both of them on the podcast, especially with Carrie. I mean, we always love having Brent on, and he is going to be sharing a perspective of what Lender Toolkit's focusing on, some of the solutions they're bringing. But I'm really interested in Carrie's perspective because as SVP of Strategic Planning, and they've got a really successful digital mortgage initiative going on. And so how does this fit in? What's your vision? How does Lender's Toolkit fit into that? And we're going to be talking more about that in the Hot Topic segment. So stay tuned to the rest of the podcast. We're grateful to have you here. So let's say a special thank you to our sponsors, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, as well as Finastra Fusion Mortgage Bot Solution. You can tap into the robust features such as user-defined groups for processors, underwriters, closers, and rely on automated email notifications for various stages of the loan process. Check out all the features and get real-time pipeline information. A lot of that's in some of the other systems, but the way they go about it at Finastra is a bit unique. I encourage you to check them out. Go listen to the podcast we recorded with Karen Jenkins on October 4th, talking about strategic vision and the overall user experience as well as customer experience, UX and CX, which is so critical. And a lot of the focus at Finastra is also their open architecture, which is very interesting, and how they are making interfaces work so successfully and a big part of their recent growth. Anyway, Lenders One, also Mortgage Collaborative. These two co-ops do a great job of helping lenders and vendors like ourselves. We're members of both of these, and we're so thrilled with what the results we get out of these. There's great reason to be a part of one or not both of these. We're a part of both of them. More and more people are becoming members of both because of the uniqueness of the two. But they do operate in basically the same space, but have slightly different focuses and programs. So check out Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative. Thrilled to have them as sponsors, as well as the Community Mortgage Lenders of America, as well as Incelerate. Josh Friend does a great job over there helping with his CRM solution in the engagement platform. Looking forward to having Josh back on and talking about that. Check out his podcast from June, as well as Knowledge Group, Ken Perry, and the Learning Management System there at Knowledge Group. Does a great job of helping you educate your people and keeping them current in all that's going on, as well as Mobility, MMI, and Modex. We had Modex on last week, the Dale Larsons, Dale the Third, and Dale Jr. on last week talking about how powerful Modex can be and this technology that's there. I love the feedback we're getting regarding artificial intelligence on the predictability of a loan officer. That was some comments that they made that really caught a lot of people's attention. Imagine that, having artificial intelligence predictive model on how long a loan officer will stay and how successful it'll be. Check out both Mobility MMI as well as Modex for all the solutions they provide. Also thrilled to have SnapDocs as one of our sponsors. They do a great job of helping on the digital mortgage experience. If you haven't checked them out, be sure to do so. Also listen to Michelle Rana, who was our guest on September 13th. Some exciting stuff going on over there. As well as Success Kit, everyone notices how your customer referrals can close more business than anything else. We recently signed up with Success Kit. And if you're a vendor or a lender and you're wanting testimonials on your website or just have some material created for your marketing material to support your marketing effort, you need to check out Success Kit. I have been thrilled with what they've done for us on our consulting business, and I'm sure they'll do the same for you. Julian does an amazing job of creating just really compelling content, drawing it out of people. Yeah, check them out, successkit.com, as well as Now Lenders Toolkit is the newest one of our newest sponsors. So thrilled to have them as a sponsor and on today's show. Special thank you goes out to Rob, Les, Alice, Alan, Matt, and Jack for their contributions each and every week to the podcast. Let's get over to Rob Van Rapphorst with this week's Mortgage Minute. Rob?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Rapphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, President Biden announced his intent to nominate current Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell for a second term and current board member Leo Brainard for vice chair. If confirmed by the Senate, Powell would bring continuity as the Fed begins its process of tapering accommodative asset purchases. Brainard is expected to further emphasize the Fed's analysis of climate-related risks and the development of a modernized CRA framework. Also last week, MBA submitted comments to the FHFA in support of its proposed changes to the capital framework of the GSEs. The adjustments would generate greater incentives for the GSEs to engage in credit risk transfer and would lower the likelihood that our risk incentive leverage ratio serves as a binding capital constraint. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining me.
I encourage you to become a member of the MBA and also get signed up for the Mortgage Action Alliance. So much that the MBA does for us. And one of the things is having our voices heard on the Hill. There's not that many of us, so we need to join together. And you can do so by using the Mortgage Action Alliance app to get signed up. And then they send you these notifications of what the bills are, what's pending. And you can then add your signature to that if you agree with what their position is. I agree with what they're doing, and I encourage you to step up and download this app and have your voice heard as well. Grateful for all that the MBA does. I'm grateful for Rob Van Rapphorst to bring us his report each and every week. Thank you, Rob, very much. Let's get over Les Parker with the TM Spotlight and this week's Macro View of the Markets. Les, what you got for us?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy. Fluke comes from colors everywhere. Stocks drop unfair. Bonds like a rainbow. Fear of governments overreacting to another variant turned Black Friday into a dark day for stocks, propelling treasuries higher. However, the volatile action did not change the trend to higher mortgage rates. Get used to wild moves. Expect to see mortgage rates over 3.5% and below 2.5% over the next 8 months. Omicron is one of many variants. Odds favor lower rates of death and hospitalizations, which is normal degeneration of viruses. Coughing, COVID in the air. Oh, everywhere. It comes in colors. These views are my own. Sign up for a kaleidoscope of views at tmspotlight.com.
Boy, if you listened to last week's podcast, Les dialed in and said, hey, you want me to add some color to this? And Alice had written down the fact that Les had been so accurate, and he had said that interest rates would be up over 3. By December, he nailed it again and nailed it again and again and again and again. And so Les was listening in. He dialed in, and that's when he said, we're going to see interest rates back below 1% over the next 12 months. I'm going, wow, the volatility is going to be crazy. So we're seeing more evidence of that. COVID will be contributing to that of the various variants. But let's say TM Spotlight, you can sign up for the paid version of Les's TM Spotlight newsletter. you'll get that for free. Just like Matt Graham is here, who offers, for those of you signing up for the MBSLive.net service, you put in LOL, you get that for an extended period without a credit card. Matt Graham, good to have you here. Matt is the founder, CEO of MBS Live with today's market update. Yeah, the latest variant kind of messes things up a little bit, throws a little rock in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, the typical mortgage person moral dilemma where the bad news for society is good news for rates. And Les basically covered that. And that was the big story from last week on Friday. Get to that in just a second. So holiday shortened week, it always makes things a little bit weird for financial markets due to lighter liquidity and in some cases, lighter volume. The big to-do at the beginning of the week was Treasury supply. We had a condensed auction cycle with all three auctions taking place by Tuesday. And that's normally a Tuesday through Thursday process. So asking primary dealers and other market participants to bid on that much Treasury supply in a condensed time frame can put upward pressure on rates, even though they know it's coming. And that was arguably the case. The beginning of the week really saw a linear move toward higher yields. Ooh. And one that was consistent with just sort of defensively pricing in additional supply and uncertainty heading into what is effectively a four-day weekend. But the weekend wasn't truly 4 days because, of course, on Friday, we had a chance to trade a half day rather aggressively. Oh, and by the way, we should mention Fed minutes came out on Wednesday. There was some speculation that the Fed might say something a bit more forceful about how it could accelerate tapering or bring forward the rate hike outlook. But nothing in the minutes was really sinister in that regard. And so markets sort of breathed a collective sigh of relief and yields were actually cooling off by Wednesday afternoon. So then it fell to Friday to bring all the drama. I posted in my newsletter, if you look at a chart of Google Trends of the variant name, the original B1.1 point, whatever it was, it didn't really exist until Thanksgiving Day. And then the day after Thanksgiving exploded in the wee hours of the night. And when it did, then bonds really rallied immensely in Europe. And the rally continued in the domestic session, all in all, over 16 bips in 10-year yields, dropping from lows 1.64-ish on Wednesday afternoon all the way down to 1.47 and change by the end of Friday. So a crazy big rally. Same story for MBS. And yes, all due to Omicron. Now, this is all just objective connecting the dots. There's no value judgment as to whether or not it's warranted. Could it be a knee-jerk reaction based on fear and uncertainty of what could happen? Yes, absolutely. Could it blow over? Yeah, it could. There was another variant a couple months ago, the Mu variant, that had some people concerned. And then some epidemiologists were saying, hey, don't be concerned about this. And it blew over fairly quickly. Those same epidemiologists are seeming a little bit more concerned this time around. And I think that's why markets are paying more attention. So, but they are all saying it remains to be seen. We're going to need a couple weeks to figure out what sort of impact this is going to. Could be the kind of thing where it's more contagious, but the symptoms aren't as severe. And ultimately, it doesn't end up being as big of a deal as people were worried about on Friday. But based on the way markets are trading so far this week, the concerns are still on the table. We had a little bit of weakness at the start of the session, but I view that more as sort of a return of liquidity and pricing out a bit of the quote unquote greased skids rally that happened on Friday. So now we're just a few bips higher in 10-year yields and only an eighth of a point lower in MBS, even after the significant rally on Friday. And that's been good for lender rate sheets so far. For the rest of the week, I think that we will continue hanging on every last word of any significant Omicron updates. Of course, we have economic data. It's the big week of economic data on any given month with the ISM reports, and those are on Wednesday and Friday. And then, of course, we have the big jobs report on Friday. Another sort of non-market related, but definitely mortgage market related, interesting headline will be FHFA releasing updated conforming loan limits tomorrow. And that is because it relies on Q3 expanded seasonally adjusted HPI. And that's been on the calendar to be released tomorrow since August 2020. There was a lot of debate about when it would come out this year, but it is coming out tomorrow. And that should be somewhere around 650,000, give or take 5,000. We'll see. But anywhere in that neighborhood is going to be a huge upgrade from the previous limit. And yeah, it might be the most interesting thing that happens this week if markets stay relatively paralyzed. That's all for this week, Dave.
Yeah. So chances of it staying paralyzed, any you want to go there?
I don't want to go there.
No,
because what you do,
don't
really
want to go there at all.
So Jack, one of the things I love about Matt, he just does not go on a limb. He goes, nope, nothing but the facts, man. Nothing but the facts.
He plays it right down the middle of the fairway.
He does, plays it safe. You can tell he's a risk management guy. So Jack, your thoughts when you look at this Omicron variant? Any thoughts?
And it's really more of a question for Matt. And did the market really react to the virus, or did it react governments reacting to the virus?
Well, I think those are one and the same, honestly, because it's never really the virus isn't going to infect computers and make traders make different trades in the first place. It's always the implication of the virus, and those implications can go to the realm of policy, lawmaker policy, and it can also go to trade related stuff, imports and exports. And so I think that as far as travel bans themselves, just for people flying on airplanes, maybe not as much as import export situations, and also perhaps some measure of anticipation about just everyday citizens' fear of doing stuff and going out and doing things. And so if that is inhibiting the free flow of the global economy, then that's going to have an impact on markets, obviously. But I think more than anything, when something comes out, when a new variant comes out and it looks like it might be Delta, and we think back to how Delta surprised us and sort of it took the pandemic from being something that was like, oh, hey, this might be going away, sort of, it's great, let's go out and do stuff, to, oh, wow, COVID's still with us. It's the sort of buy bonds first, ask questions about why we're buying bonds later. I think as markets sorted that out, that's, you know, one of the reasons that we had a little bounce over the weekend. And if it continues to look less and less onerous, I think that yields will drift back up over the course of the week, as long as econ data plays ball with that. But like Les said, there's a wide spectrum of potential volatility for a variety of reasons, not just COVID. But yeah, policy response definitely matters.
One of your friends just wrote, texted us here. I'd love to know who's behind this phone number. But anyway, they just said, Matt is always unflappable. You can throw him questions. He is just the master. Muhammad Ali of that. You can just dodge around everything so well. You got fans out there. You do a great job. And I love your website, because what it does, it brings so much information to us on a single screen. And we can look at it, look on our mobile apps, look on an iPad, no matter where you're at. You can take a look at what is going on real time in the markets. And I appreciate that. And I love the approach that you take to it. You try to do nothing but the facts, bam, as much as you can, the old Dragnet series. And you really just get to the facts and you really focus in on that. And you let the website and all the stories that surround the markets just speak for themselves. You post everything up there. I love it. I encourage people to check it out of the website. And it's mbslive.net. And if you sign up, use the code LOL for an extended and no credit card trial. Matt, do a great job. Thank you so much. You get so much feedback on you and the excellent job. More people have gotten turned on to your website as a result of being on the podcast. And they all go, this is really good. Like, I love this stuff. So got fans and a growing number of fans. And many of them are.
Thanks, Dave. You have a fan here too, my man.
Well, we just fan away here on each other. Appreciate you. Have a great one. Have a great time up there in the Portland area. Alice Alvey is here, and she is CMB Vice President of Education and Training at Union Home Mortgage. Legislative update. Alice, did you have a good Thanksgiving?
I did. I had a great Thanksgiving. And as a matter of fact, I spent the weekend immersed in the book, The Leader's Guide to Unconscious Bias, How to Reframe Bias, Cultivate Connections, and Create High-Performing Teams. It was written by Pam Fuller and Mark Murphy with Ann Chow, who's the CEO at AT&T Business. And it does a really great job of weaving the leadership practices that you'll find taught through Franklin Covey within this new, a different framework than what, it's not that typical book, right? I think everybody who's in leadership today is looking for solutions and ways to educate their teams. And how do you bring this, the subject of unconscious bias, into conversation? And I think this is a great book. It has us reframe the word bias into simply the word preference. And that in its of itself is an eye opener, that the word bias can have a lot of negative connotations and people shut down and don't listen. But if you think of it as preference, and really listen to the examples in the book, I think there's some great takeaways for leadership at companies. So we're looking through material and content that we want to make sure that we can get our partners engaged in through our diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging efforts. And just wanted to share that book with everyone. I think it's a great read. It has some great information in it.
What's the name of it again? One of our please give us the name of it again. I didn't write
sure.
it down.
Sure. The Leader's Guide to Unconscious Bias.
Good.
And
good. We'll put a
by
link.
Pam Fuller. Yeah.
Pam Fuller. I've heard several people talk about this book, and it is being touted. Everyone has read it said, man, this is really good.
It's not, it's what is great is it's a business read. It's not mm-hmm. trying to get political or get people emotionally charged in any one direction. It's very neutral and just trying to bring up awareness in the conversation about preferences overall. So definitely some great stories in there as well that many people can relate to. So great book for leaders. And mm-hmm. I wondered if everyone saw, so changing subjects quickly, which you have to do in 5 minutes. Did you see the NBA chart of the week with the I love this annual bit yeah. that they do with the price of turkeys.
Yes. So funny. Yeah.
It's a good one to take a look at
this time
of year.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll put a link to it in our show notes. That was really good. Yeah. Fran, Tony, and Marianne and everyone over there at the NBA does a great job bringing out that every year. It's hilarious.
Yes, they do. It's a good one. And then last but not least, just the agencies are resuming their enforcement under Reg X. Just as a reminder, this came out a little while ago, where if you think about all the different things that fall under RESPA, still a lot within servicing, and the fact that all of those enforcement provisions specifically to the mortgage servicing rules were kind of put on hold over the COVID period. Well, that's all gone. So now mm-hmm. lenders need to make sure that they're watching all their compliance. I think most companies didn't take huge advantage of that, but there would be some gray areas definitely as we were coming in and out of different forbearance rules. And so just a heads up for companies that all of that forgiveness is gone and the enforcement is back. So
yep.
that's my update today, Dave. Back
good,
to you.
Good. Have you heard anything more? I want to question in from our listeners. Alice, have you heard anything about the appraisal? We had a great announcement at the MBA and it's been crickets since then. Have you heard anything, Alice, about what we can anticipate from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac GSEs on how appraisal waivers?
It's a great question, and the answer is still crickets. We haven't heard anything, so we are still watching, and we will let you know as soon as we hear something.
Yep, here on the podcast, I had not seen anything else, but I thought I got to, and it's on the forefront of everyone's mind, especially it came up over Thanksgiving. My oldest daughter was thinking, maybe I should become an appraiser, and then we were looking at the hurdles and the requirements, and I thought, does this change everything? The answer is no. We're going to need appraisers. That's going to be for certain. Now we need as many to come into the market, but the market is growing so much. So we'll see if we don't have some new technology solutions as we look at alternatives, statistical evaluations, and number them. So we're working with a couple other people to come on the podcast after the first year to be talking about possible other solutions. Well, there are some really good solutions out there. We'll be talking about those after the first year. So pay attention to what we have on the docket coming up. Alice, thank you so much. Good to have you on the podcast each and every week. And look forward to having you participate in the Hot Topic segment. Good to have you on. Let's get over to Alan Pollack, who dialed in to join us today. Good to have you here, Alan. He's with this week's Weekly Tech Update.
Good. Yeah. Good to be here as always, David. So a little fun fact, since we talked about Thanksgiving, it takes 10 hours and 2 minutes. It's the length of time that the average American male would need to spend on the treadmill to burn the 4,500 calories consumed at the average Thanksgiving meal.
Mm.
And it doesn't include late night turkey sandwiches and second day Thanksgiving festivals.
Yeah, it's so funny. Well, it sounds like you're in an airport. Are you traveling again, by the way? Are you out and about?
I am out and about, but I'm not traveling.
Okay.
It's the quietest place I can find.
They're quite good. Well, makes you know, alive from Alan wherever he is at. Both Alice and I have done
on
these,
the road.
You know, on the road traveling. We've done our podcasts while in airports. So yeah, that works. But it's fine.
That's
I just
right.
had to ask. Sorry, some before someone else.
Where's
did.
Waldo?
Where's Waldo? Where
yeah.
is? Where is that? So, all right. What else you got?
If you want to participate in the industry, David always brings up different ways to participate. Well, I'm going to tell you about Mizmo. They are mm-hmm. searching for participants for their closing initiative. And so it's actually, they're going to be focusing on standardizing the pre-closing title document data sets. So if you want to get involved, just go to the MBA site or just Google Mizmo and you can find it and participate. Share some love, share some knowledge to everybody else. So David, here's a technology solution that I really like these guys. They've done a lot and I just continue to pop up in my data feed. So HousingWire spoke with the co-founder at Homebot and it was talking about how to make clients for life and using their technology and how to help through not only the entire home buying process, but actually being able to help with the life of the loan. And so what they talk about is keeping the loan officer connected with their past clients after the transaction. And really how what Homebot does is they track home values, they track loans, equity, and then they're helping the consumer understand all of that. And they're called a financial optionality with their home. And they said, at the end of the day, right, when's the best time to sell, rent, remodel, or refinance? So check it out, Homebot. They got some really cool technology. And if you are a technology company and you want to add more value to your lenders because you want to help them with the life of the loan, then check them out, what they're doing. So, David, do you have what's called FOMO?
Yep.
So it's a type of anxiety, right? It stems from the belief that others may be having more fun or doing better when you're not there. Well, Garth and our friends over at Stratmore have said that our industry is having a lot of FOMO. And their most recent research has found that mortgage lenders are not immune to sitting around or not sitting around. So here's what they said, a couple quick little things. They basically said better technology does not mean better profits. Mm-hmm. They said that people are forced to implement tech with a fear that they will be left behind. We were forced to digitalize with COVID. And they used 20 years of data to come up with this analysis. And what they ultimately found is there is no, so zero, N-O-Z-E-R-O, correlation between how much a company spends on technology and a lower fulfillment cost per loan or a higher net production income for banks and independents. So if you feel like you're missing out, then go spend the money and get the right technology in there. But it doesn't end there, David. Moving on to a separate topic. I think I mentioned last week, right? And this is all on the same kind of thread. Technology can't replace the human touch. This was an article in 2017. Mm-hmm. And they said, while a machine can perform a given task often more efficiently than we can, it lacks the artistry in the activity, that the unique human ability to cater to the needs of the individual, right? How much do we keep talking about that in our industry? The fact that you will never replace loan officers. You may use data, you may enhance the experience, but people still matter. We should start a new hashtag, FOMO PSM. So fear of missing out and people still matter, right? Buy the technology, but the people still matter.
Anyways,
the other thing, David, kind of like saying, hey, the proof is in the pudding. We'll get this from ICE Mortgage Technology. Today's borrower expects the mortgage industry to be timely, customized, and digital, right, like we expect. So much so that 63% of consumers feel an online mortgage process would be easier than an in-person process, according to their most recent survey. And you'll need an offer a personalized consumer direct lending experience through the devices and communication channels, that's omni-channel, their preference, right? And we've been talking about this. We know this is the case. Well, EY.com says mortgage lending reaches an inflection point. Get this. Lenders need to harness their data and leverage innovative technologies to deliver an efficient and personalized home buying experience, right? We're just singing the tune. And I'm not going to read all the points that EY mentioned, but I'm going to tell you this. They said it's a critical time, and decisions made will determine the winners and the losers, especially with being so competitive on rates. But ultimately, leverage data. That's their biggest point. Use the data to pre-fill applications. Use the data to personalize the experience. The same thing that Ellie Mae just said. Same thing that Garth was saying. So use this data. Data is king, as we always talk about.
Right.
So all great articles, EY.com, IceMortgageTechnology.com, StratmoreGroup.com, and HousingWire.com. Check out all those great articles. And next week, David, we're going to talk about who are the right leaders in your company to determine the technology that you need to do and your end-of-year health check that we talk about every December, as well as how to rotate, called rotating your tech team. So we'll talk about that next week. Otherwise,
Thank
I hope
you.
Everyone has a fantastic week.
Thanks for joining in. So good to have you here, Alan. Appreciate it. Thanks for the tech update, all the information and insights as well. So good job. Folks, that ends the weekly mortgage update part of the podcast. We're now going to go into the hot topic segment. For those of you listening on a downloaded basis, move on to the next podcast because we break the live podcast into two podcasts. If you're listening on a downloaded basis, that's how you do it. If you're listening live, just stay right here as we're going to get right into the hot topic segment. Here we go. Welcome, everybody, to the Lincoln and Lending Hot Topic segment. I'm excited to have a dear old friend of mine, Brett Embler, Director of Sales at Lender Toolkit. And joining him will be Kerry Rogers, Senior Vice President of Strategic Planning at Lennar Mortgage. Very excited about that, especially in light of some of Alan's comments here, getting a perspective. But Brent, it's good to have you back. We'll let you introduce Kerry in just a minute, explain why you've invited her to the podcast. But it's good to have you back, friend. Appreciate you.
Thanks, David. Yeah, thanks. And that was a really great setup. Thank you, Alan, for sharing some of the information from the article that Stratmore put out recently. It's interesting to hear there's no correlation between spending on technology and lowering fulfillment costs. I think I would submit that lenders haven't invested in the right technology, or at least not focused on the right technology, and they haven't fully committed to that technology. And I think we'll see through this hot topic discussion that that's the case. So, David, a little bit about where I come from. I was with Velma for several years. They're a sponsor of your show. They're a CRM and marketing company. And what I was seeing, David, was that marketing and CRM was really becoming commoditized. And I think this speaks to Alan's point. It was being commoditized. It wasn't being adopted. And it wasn't being something that lenders were really focused on, right? They would go out and buy the CRM technology and cross their fingers and hope that it would make a difference in their business, right? And I remember reading through Dave Savage's Facebook group from Mortgage Coach. And all the time we would talk about from top producers, the question would be, what's the best CRM out there? And the answer is the one that you use, right? And so yeah. It's not just about investing in technology. It's about actually using the technology and really incorporating it into your business. And speaking of Stratmore, I remember in about 2017, I was watching a presentation by Garth over at Stratmore. And he was talking about exactly what Alan just mentioned, and that's the technology spending is going up and profitability is going down. It's not supposed to work that way when you invest in technology. And even in 2018, as you remember, David, profitability was so bad. I remember listening to a podcast where the host was joking about terminating their top producer because they were losing money on every deal. And obviously, that was a joke, but every joke is grounded in some measure of reality. And so being in the CRM space, I had a lot of exposure to point of sale. And I always found it really remarkable that so much money was being spent on POS and CRM, and the cost to produce a loan was increasing. And that kind of came full circle for me. I was still with Velma in 2019, and we partnered with Lender Toolkit to develop an ECOA automation solution. It's a really terrific solution, and I started talking to compliance and operations folks, and that's when I realized now I see why margins are compressing and why technology spend is going up. All this investment in loan officer-focused software is great at enabling sales velocity, but without optimizing the manufacturing process, all you're doing is just adding overhead, right?
Yep, that's so true. That's a great point.
It really is. So when I saw what Lender Toolkit was doing with the end-to-end automations for mortgage manufacturing, I jumped at being a part of that. I wanted to be a part of delivering digital mortgage transformations to lenders all over the country. And we really want to bring the passion POS companies brought to originations to the manufacturing process. And investing in operations, it's not as sexy, I guess, if you will. Marketing and sales focused investments, it's fun, right? It's more applications, recruiting more branches, more customers. And the manufacturing process may not be as fun to invest in, but when it's done right, I mean, there's nothing better than being profitable, having happy customers, happy employees. So that's why we're really excited to work with Lennar and Kerry and her team on projects like task-based workflows. And so I'd really like to hear from Kerry and really excited to have her here with us.
Yeah, Laura Escobar is a great leader. There are so many great leaders. And Kerry, I'm not surprised you're there and doing so well. Good to have you on the podcast, Kerry. Good to have you here.
Thanks, David. I'm happy to be here.
Just so our audience could get a chance to get to know you a little bit about yourself and your background. Love to hear about
it. Sure. Yeah. Well, since we keep talking about Garth, I'm going to talk about him a little bit more because back in the 90s, this is actually my 30th year in the industry. I was born and raised in the industry with parents who were in the industry. And back in the 90s, I was at a company, many of you probably remember, Mortgage.com. I worked very closely with Garth Graham. He ran the call center and I ran all the technology applications and workflows and working with operations and training there. So we worked really close together for many, many years. And the current CIO at Lennar Financial Services, Tom Moreno, was with us on that journey as well back in the 90s. We were a bit ahead of our time back then. So we had our own proprietary loan origination system. And I'm just a geek when it comes to that stuff. So I was in the middle of it. And I've had some great mentors in my career who've kind of brought me along this really diverse path that I've had. I've spent time in, obviously, in operations, in production. Mm-hmm. I was an AE for many years and ran a larger mid-sized mortgage operations for a while. I've worked at Fiserv. And most recently, before coming to Lennar Mortgage, I was with ICE Mortgage Technology for 6 years, working in their professional services department. So I've had some really great exposure to many different companies and many different ways of tackling some of the challenges in our industry, some unique perspective on workflow and use of our talent that we have available to us. So, yeah, I mean, this is the stuff I'm passionate about. So I'm happy to talk about it today.
Well, I'm excited to have you here and I want to get right into talking about what's driving Lennar's desire for change and automation, Carrie. I know you're strategic planning, so that's just part of your role. Give us a little insights.
Sure. So really for us, our automation, it has to tie back to two of our core goals. It's our customer experience, quality of our loans, and it has to drive those aspects for us. Otherwise, the automation doesn't necessarily make sense. We have customers, obviously, who are obtaining financing from us. We also have Lennar as a home builder, and we have all of our associates who work for us, and they're very important. Those are our customers. Our industry is really challenged. Like, we have to do a lot more with less. Sometimes the volume that we have to deal with is just astounding, and it's overwhelming, and it's really difficult to sort of take it all and dissect it into something that you can find value from, right? Like, how do you automate something when there's just this much going on? And it's been interesting. So we've been able to focus on, let's just say, the low-hanging fruit first. Like, there's a lot of things that can be automated that don't take away from the expertise of the talent that we have. It's things that help them. It complements their job. Mm-hmm. It becomes like their digital assistant. Right. So we have different, whether we're using RPA to take away the extra steps to generate and send the closing document. Sometimes that could take between 3 to 10 minutes, depending on how complicated it is. And we have some RPA go in behind our closers and do that for them. We have different things that we focused on where we could eliminate our onshore staff and train them up to work on the things that keep them focused on building their careers and becoming more talented in the industry versus just clicking the same buttons over and over again and the stare and compare and checking the checker. Yeah. So we've really had to focus on eliminating that because that's what people don't want to do. People want to learn and they want to grow. Really just focusing on the easy stuff first, which we've pretty much done. So now we're moving into a little bit more challenging sort of automation, which we can talk about a little bit, what we're doing with Lender Toolkit as well. Yeah, we definitely focus on our associates and their experience.
Very good. Jack, let's get over to you for a question.
Sure, David. This is really for Brent. Is Lender Toolkit seeing the same desire for change and automation in the industry?
Yeah, we are seeing the same desire for change and automation at a high level. I think everybody knows the next round of advancements are going to require a deeper level of commitment, and Carrie just touched on it. The first round of digital mortgage was implementing a new way of collecting the application or maybe eliminating a few of the button clicks, those types of things. And those are very important. But the next round of digital mortgage transformation and adopting a culture of automation from not just the application, but automating disclosures, automating underwriting, post-close, delivery, tasks, how is tasking done within your organization? That really does require a fundamental shift in the way a mortgage is manufactured. We use the term digital mortgage transformation, and it's more than just technology. It requires specialization in employee roles. It requires increased levels of accountability, deeper metrics, not just how many applications are we getting. It requires clean lines of communication. And so in general, I would say there is a desire for change, but I think it's somewhat mitigated by the changing market. And I know that everyone knows there's an opportunity to improve, but taking the leap to transform your business is tough, and that's why having that really strong leadership, David, you mentioned Laura Escobar at Lennar, and that's strong leadership, and Carrie is a strong leader, and having that clear focus is really where the rubber hits the road.
That's so true. Alice, let's get over to you.
Yeah, so just kind of taking a look here, you listed off quite a few challenges that lenders are facing. All of them seem really big as you list through all that. What do you think is the number one?
If you have to bring it down to something that's easy and simple, I think number one, you can learn lessons by automating the simple things first, the things that are black and white, right? I mean, whether it's pulling a single merge credit report and automatically upgrading it, or automating when your flood cert pulls, the different things that eliminate those button clicks, I think are the low-lying fruit that lenders can benefit from. They can find a very clear ROI by doing it. And the industry has already mastered most of those types of easier automation, you know, tools. And there's a lot of resources out there who can help do that without taking away a lot of time and resources from the leadership and technology team to do that. So I think those are the easy ones to go in and get your feet wet. And as you start to find your flow and your groove for the time that it takes to do that, then you can move into a little bit more complicated type of automation. I will also say, though, that your workflow has to be precise, because when you automate, adoption is the key. And the adoption has to work with the workflow. Because if the workflow is not aligned, then the technology fails, and then you start to lose confidence, and then you have adoption problems. And that's a whole other probably podcast we could have. It really is one of the most important factors.
And that's one where so many people stumble over. Alice, remember when you guys were launching the correspondent division? We were talked about this numerous times. What's the process? You called me on almost a daily basis there for a while, getting thoughts about what's the process? What are you seeing the best practices working? And I think the biggest challenge most people have, Carrie, is they don't want to face that, because many in our industry have been doing it a particular way, and they do not want you rocking their world and saying, we're going to suggest a different process. No, I've been doing this for 30 some years. I'm not going to change my process. You can all change, but I'm not. I'm staying with this. How have you overcome that?
That's such a great question, David, because that is like the thing that I preach every day, whether I'm trying to align with my other team members or our leadership team and drive us forward. That is the key. Our industry has a lack of talent. We have a lack of new blood coming into the industry. Yeah. And it's so difficult to bring someone in and teach them this whole job. Like, here, be a processor. To be a good processor, years, and it takes mentorship, and it takes a lot of hands-on experience, and we can't do that quickly. Our industry is bad, and the reason we're bad around doing that is because we haven't changed. We don't want to change the process. So what we're working on with Lender Toolkit, and it's so key to our growth, and I think the industry's growth, is to be able to go into a manufacturing task-based workflow where we can easily tell people what they need to do, when they need to do it, and how to do it. So our new talent coming in, or people who are looking to excel their career, can master tasks versus an entire job role. So even though we don't want to change, we almost have to. We have to disrupt.
Yeah, it's so true. You're talking a language that is so one of the favorite topics with Jack Nunnery. And Jack, when you launched your correspondent division there, I had the privilege of working with you on that. And boy, this was the absolute topic. Such an important one.
Absolutely, David. We had an opportunity to embrace some of the better technology that was in the market in 2015 as we built and launched our correspondent lending program during that time frame.
I remember that so well. And you started, we want creating a greenfield experience, and then you just really drilled into that so much. Let's get over to Alan. Alan Pollock, good to have you on the podcast joining in as you listen to this discussion. What questions might you have here, friend? Especially from a vendor's perspective. I love that.
From a vendor's perspective, well, I mean, every vendor has challenges. And I think the big thing is trying to sell automated solutions, right? We talked about this earlier, your technology spend and how you get value. I think they have to invest in technology, but they've got to adopt it and implement it. So anyways, what do you think the biggest challenge would be when vendors face selling automated solutions?
From my perspective, having the background that I have, there was always dollars to spend on sales-focused technology, right? CRM, POS, those dollars were always there. And so now that I'm in with Lender Toolkit, I'm in the manufacturing space, helping the executives see the value of focusing on operations, I think is really, really important. We have to ask them to explore, why are my manufacturing costs so high? Where are the improvements that can be made? Let me give you a couple of examples. And this is in no way supposed to be a, you know, shameless plug. There's a lot of automation solutions out there. I just know our customers' experience, so I'll speak from that perspective. We did a case study recently for one of our customers. They're doing 1,300 loans a month. They have 14 underwriters. Okay. I talked to a prospective customer last week. They do about the same number of loans. They have underwriters. That's $250 in profitability loss on every loan. All right. And said another way, that's $4 million a year. So that's why I would push back on there's no correlation between technology investment and fulfillment costs, right? Commitment periods is another area that's wildly different depending on the lender you ask. The case study we did, our customer is using our end-to-end automation. They're doing three-day commitments versus other lenders that don't have the automation. They're doing 10 and 14-day commitments. So that's another million and a half in profitability. So the best news is we don't have this existential debate about the viability of a mortgage operation. Any lender in the country that's in operations, you can look anywhere around your business and you can see opportunity for improvement and optimizing the manufacturing process. And so really starting with a sales process that's focused on a vision, a digital mortgage transformation, or whatever your vision is as the vendor, starting with that and focusing on that. And don't worry about selling the product. That'll come naturally. We have to help them, the executives, picture their business in a future state, a state of a digital mortgage transformation state. And then I think the last thing is really resource constraints, really helping lenders to work through the resource constraints. Carrie said it very well. We've got a lack of talent in the industry. Mm-hmm. And so you can only do so many things when it comes to technology. So I would ask executives to look at what you're prioritizing. Do you have a technology roadmap? Are you sticking to the roadmap? Or are you getting sidetracked by the fire of the day? Maybe finally, what are your guiding principles for your technology roadmap? Are you letting one transaction from a top producer take you completely off track?
Such an easy temptation. Such a big challenge. Really, really.
Yeah, David, a shameless plug for TMS Advisors, but everything that you just mentioned is the reason why sometimes an outside resource is the best person to bring in to help drive those technology projects, because they are not seeing squirrels and chasing birds. They are focused on delivering a project and the timeline and doing whatever it is they need to do to get those people aligned. It's really so important that once you start one of these projects that you continue with them.
Alice, if we could jump in here real quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the conversation. And so, Carrie, you started to talk about this task-based approach for how to bring people in. How has technology played a role in that aspect in making it easier to expand your operation?
So we've taken a couple different approaches. We do have a pretty robust offshore team, which we rely on, and they're amazing. And they're very, very flexible with us. And so when we find an opportunity for them to onboard a new task, they really focus on tasks for us today. So if we have an opportunity or we have a quality problem and we can find a way to fix it with that team, we initially start with that team sort of mastering that task. And then if we can identify the clear path to automate that task, we then take the next step to automate the task, right? And then we'll give something new to our offshore team to work on next. So we're probably about a third task base when it comes to our end-to-end process. And that's worked really well for us. I think the biggest challenge is that we've had a difficult time with the technology that's available today to manage those tasks and to really just uncover the data that surrounds those tasks. We do make it work, but it's not easy. And it takes some pretty talented resources to sort of corral and wrangle all those chaos that could happen when you have multiple people working on one loan. So we've learned a lot from that over the last couple of years with being somewhat task-based. And we're taking what's worked for us and we're applying that. We're partnering with Lender Toolkit. We're using ISO's task-based workflow technology, their workflow automation as well. And we're building out our layers of tasks that support our process from initial submission from our loan officers all the way through up to the post-closing process. And we're breaking it down using simplified logic initially. We'll call that phase one and phase two, right? Simplified logic. When things need to happen, who needs to happen by, right? What's going to trigger it? And what data needs to be updated if that task is complete? So we're biting this off in small chunks. We're starting real simplified at the top, and we're working to make sure that the tool that's built to help us manage this, and we're partnering with LGK on that, is really, really geared towards transparency, right? We want everyone to be able to see exactly what has to be done, exactly what has been done, and we don't need a lot of reports and different screens and different places to go to see if something's been received or completed. So that's been a really fun journey. We're actually going to be going into our pilot very, very soon on that. And while we do that, right, we're getting more and more granular as we nail down those workflow pieces that can be standardized through advanced logic. So, you know, using advanced logic and data, getting data off of documents, getting data, you know, the XML files from all of our services, the data is what's going to drive the activities and the workflow. Our industry, our resources, our talent, they spend so much time every day trying to figure out what should I work on first. But that's what we spend a lot of money on. And we actually don't realize how much we spend on people trying to figure out what's the priority. What should I do? What should I work on? Especially in our business, because, you know, we have a long build out time. We're building homes. They're not done in 30 or 45 days. So it could become a little overwhelming when you have such a large pipeline. So we're really trying to focus on the efficiency for our associates and the data to make sure that we're managing and providing the best customer service to our customers at the same time. I really think that there's a lot of different paths that everyone can go down to kind of find their happy spot when it comes to task-based workflow. But I think in order to really achieve that, you have to have the right technology in place. And that is one of those areas where we can't just figure out an outside way to do it. We really have to have it integrated into the day-to-day workflow of all of our associates.
What are you seeing as far as a trend? Are people looking more away from offshoring to technology like Lender's Toolkit, or is this still a balance between the two?
That's a great question. I think from a resource perspective on the operational level, I think it's balanced, and I think it has to stay balanced. We try to be very smart about who we use for what and what the risk is in the right balance as well, right? When it comes to having offshore partners versus onshore, using COVID as an example, everybody was shut down and working remotely in a different country is not as easy as working remotely in the United States. So there's a lot of challenges, things we never thought we would have to deal with, right? In our lifetime, not necessarily something that we planned for, but we got through it and we made it work. But at the same time, you learn some lessons about that balance. So I think that from a vendor perspective, we have a lot of really, really innovative and cutting edge technologies coming available to us. It's probably a little bit overwhelming. Sometimes I spend a lot of time in demos and picking apart what somebody is trying to pitch us on. And I could do that pretty quickly because I've just been on the vendor side for so long. So there is a lot. And I think lenders in general and leadership get overwhelmed by the amount of vendors coming at them at one time. And most of them are trying to solve like one specific thing, which I think Alan talked about earlier. If you're going to put an investment into a product that is going to just solve one problem, maybe your initial underwrite, and it's only going to work for 40% of your loans, is that the highest and best use of your investment? It might not be. It all comes down to doing your homework and really establishing the ROI and sticking to it. Because if you don't know what that is, then why are you doing it? You need to know exactly what you're going to get out of it, exactly how many loans it's going to work for, how many people can you move on to a better position or role because you've created this new thing. You have to dig into those details.
That's so true. Alan, I know we've talked a lot about this topic before. Jump in here, please.
I just texted you, David, fear of missing out, right? All the other mortgage origination shops have this great technology, and I either have something that I did before the better technology came out, or how come I'm not automating income calculations, right? And it's, it's really interesting how that whole concept works. And you're right on. I mean, you've got to own and drive it over the goal line into the end zone in order to succeed at these projects before you take on the next one.
Which really gets to the last question I wanted to ask is, what are some of the intangible benefits leaders gain from adopting a culture of change and automation? Carrie, let's start with you on that. It's a challenge.
We actually have recently put through a lot of our leadership team and a lot of our technology team through ProSci practitioner and sponsorship training. And I think what we learn through going through any type of change management course is that we think we know change management because we're leaders or because we've been doing this for so long. And there's so many fundamental things when it comes to change that we just glaze over. Like, do people, are they aware? And do they actually have the desire to use the new technology? Because if they don't, we're not going to get adoption. It's literally impossible. Yeah. So it's something that again, you have to plan for that. You have to bake that into your project and have a real strategic approach to how you're going to make people aware, how you're going to make them want to do something, right? And how you're going to get them to adopt it. And if they're not adopting it, what tools do you have to get them to adopt it? And sometimes it's different depending on what the technology is or what the workflow change is. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, as leaders, if we can't master adoption and we can't bring the rest of the industry with us into this new way that we all think and where we're going, because they're just there day to day, right, just trying to get it done, then that's where we're failing. Like, we have to find a way to penetrate everyone and get them excited about where we could go as an industry and how it's going to change their goals and their career path and how they're going to excel. So it's all about creating awareness and desire, truly.
Yeah, it really comes down to leadership. Brent, when you see people struggling with the intangible benefits of this and struggling with change automation, what's your perspective as a vendor on this?
Yeah, I would echo what you've already said. The workplace, it's evolved, not just because of the pandemic, but because workers, they have an evolving attitude about what a job should be and what it shouldn't be. A lot of new workers, they're millennials, and they approach a role and a company with really well-defined sets of expectations. They want their work to have meaning and purpose, right?
Yeah.
And so constantly putting out fires, triple-checking someone's work, stare and compare activities, none of that's meaningful. It's just not meaningful work. And we don't want to do that as workers. So leveraging technology allows lenders to create well-defined and meaningful roles. Communication is also a key benefit of adding technology and streamlining your workflows and having normal processes. I was reading a study, it was a Gallup study, and there were some really amazing stats in there. 69% of employees would be less likely to quit if their company was more effective at communicating. 85% consider effective communication an employee benefit. 90% of employees say good company communication is a key to a positive working environment. So again, technology, automation, normalized process, clearly defined roles, all of that improves communication and it leads to retention. But it all comes back to really just having that strong leadership and having that culture of change.
I think that's where the biggest challenge with many leaders is afraid to take on the headwinds of strong people who may have had great success and are just resistant.
Agreed.
And I think so much of it is just having that strong personality and an insistence about you. But as your final thoughts on this, any final questions for Carrie or Brent? Jack?
Actually, I've got a final question for Brent, and I've so enjoyed this podcast. But years ago, an owner of a loan origination system software company and I were having a conversation, and he made a comment. He said, people that purchase my software, onboard it, it's so often analogous to somebody buying a Ferrari and then driving it at 35 miles an hour, that they never really tap the power of the software. And so, Brent, my question to you in the universe of Lender Toolkit, do you guys help the lender maximize what the software really could allow them to do as opposed to just implementing it, getting into it, and 3 years later, you're doing the same thing. So does Lender Toolkit help a lender optimize the value of the software?
We do. And I think that's the thing that I really enjoy about this environment so much. We have dozens of system LOS system administrators, some of the best in the country. So we deeply understand the organization, how the organization operates, the challenges, the opportunities. Deeply understanding that world and the customer's world really allows us to bring our expertise, and by bringing our expertise and the lender trusting us that these guys know what they're talking about really helps us deeply implement the software, as opposed to we see a lot of new vendors come into the market and everybody's so enamored with, these guys got $12 million in funding. These guys got $50 million in funding. They must know what they're doing, or this vendor's working with this large lender, so they must know what they're doing. I think that there's a trap there that lenders can get into where they're just sort of lemmings and they're jumping over the cliff because somebody else jumped over the cliff, as opposed to really evaluating the vendors, not just their technology, but then that organization to be able to effectively bring the change that you're expecting from the automation solutions.
Yeah, that's always a challenge. Carrie, we'll let you wrap up this interview. How in the heck do you get all this to be accomplished at Lennar? There's so many questions that are coming in from so many people. So we definitely have to have you back, Carrie. That's number one.
You're welcome. I would love to. And I'm happy to talk about this because it's what I eat, breathe, and sleep, and it's what I do every day. And when you ask how, it's because I'm constantly thinking about how we're going to get there. And there's just this amazing group of leaders and individuals, and having a president like Laura Escobar, who's all about paving the way. She completely embraces change. We have the ability and we have the desire to do this. And that's why I came to work here, because I could do this a lot of different places, but I really wanted it to do somewhere where everybody was on board. And that's probably the key. How do you do it? Everybody has to be on board. There's been countless discussions about what is this task-based workflow? How are we going to know what to do? What does it look like, right? Trying to explain the vision, the benefits, and the strategy, and the ROI, repeat it, document it, show it, display it, repeat it. So constantly getting everyone looking at the same goal, the same target, when not going off somewhere to the side, that's really what I spend my energy on. And the team at Lennar, on the mortgage team, our LFS team, they're the ones who get the job done. I just help make sure they understand where we're going and why we're going there and what's going to work and what's going to make us maybe get a little off course and go back to the old way of doing things, and challenging them to think about those speed bumps that could come along the way, because not everything fits into this perfect world of where we're trying to go with automation. Some things are really hard to automate, and some things we just can't. And we identify, well, what's the best way to use our people to do this task? So just making sure we're all aligned.
You know, something you said earlier really rang true, and that is, what is the return we're going to have on this? Is it a 60% return? Is this meaning 60% of needs out there, 30% or 90%? And I think it's evaluating that, which will also be a great compass to setting your priorities. Wow, this has been a great, it just always goes so fast. Carrie Rogers, Senior Vice President of Strategic Planning, has been our guest with Lennar Homes, along with Brent Embler, who is a director of sales at Lender Toolkit. Brent, Carrie, thank you so much for both being here. Great discussion today. Appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody.
Next week, we've got Odetta Krishna coming in from First American. I met Odetta going down the escalator at the conference after the Empower event and just struck up a conversation with her. I was so impressed with her and her comments. She is the deputy chief economist at First American. So I've invited her to come out of the podcast and share what she sees coming up as we look into the new year. We'll get some new perspective on that. Looking forward to having Odetta join us, so be sure to come back here next week. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Finastra, CMLA, Lenders One, Accelerate, Mobility MMI, Modex, the MBA, Knowledge Coop, the Mortgage Collaborative, SnapDoc, Success Kit, and Lenders Toolkit, our special guest today. Good to have you with us, everybody. Have a great week, and look forward to seeing you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.